Hello, fellow writers. The beginning of the year is a great time to think about what you really want from your writing life. And if one of the things that's filled you with joy in the past is time spent encouraging, editing, and helping another writer, you might want to consider becoming a book coach yourself. Our sponsor, Author Accelerator, provides book coaching to authors like me, but also needs and trains book coaches. And they'll be hosting a free book coaching summit in January for anyone who wants to learn more. If that's got your ears perked up, head to authoraccelerator.com/summit.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. I don't remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause.
I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2. Okay.
I'm KJ Dell'Antonia, and this is #AmWriting, the weekly podcast about writing all the things, fiction, nonfiction, book proposals, pitches, entire books, short essays, and as we say every week, this is the podcast about getting things done.
I'm Jess Leahy. I am the author of The Gift of Failure and a book I'm working on preventing substance abuse in kids, and you can find my work at the New York Times, The Atlantic, and The Washington Post.
And I'm Serena Bowen, the author of 30-odd romance novels. You can find more of my work at serenabowen.com.
And I am KJ Dell'Antonia, and every week I have to resist hitting that 30-odd comment out of the ballpark. And it's so hard. I am the author of How to Be a Happier Parent, as well as a novel, The Chicken Sisters, coming out this summer to bookstores everywhere. And I am delighted to say that we have a guest this week, and we have an incredibly fun topic. This week, we are welcoming Jenny Nash to our midst. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Jenny.
Hi, everyone. Hi.
Everyone loves Jenny. We get so many great comments when Jenny's on the podcast because she has such a wealth of information.
Yes, and as regular listeners will know, Jenny is the head of Author Accelerator, which is our sponsor every week, for which we are so grateful, although she's not exactly here with that hat on today. We have also had Jenny on multiple episodes because she is a book coach extraordinaire. We've had her on to talk about revision, to talk about drafting, and she's always got details on how to get the work done. So I just wanted to lay out a quick bio for Jenny. She's published 4 novels and some nonfiction work as well. But at a certain point in her illustrious writing career, she discovered that while she was a very good writer, she is an exceptional guide to other writers. And I can speak to that because she is my guide. And we asked her here today to talk about that process, becoming a book coach, going from writer to book coach, or adding the idea of being a book coach to your writerly repertoire. We just thought, coaching each other through writing our books is kind of something we all do. We all do it, and it seemed like it was worth exploring how to do it professionally, and Jenny is the one to talk to when it comes to that.
Well, I have to say straight out that one of the reasons that book coaching is a thing is because not everybody has an amazing writing inner circle the way that you guys do. You guys are like, I don't know. I go around all the time telling people that relying on other writers or writing groups is a dangerous idea and a bad idea, and that it often doesn't work, because I see so many things coming out of writing groups that are not well written. And it's a sort of groupthink, and everybody's told the writer that they've done such a fine job, and their mother's told them they've done a good job, and their sister told them they did a good job. And most people don't have the kind of, you guys are such a serious group of writer friends, the way you help each other and support each other, and you lift each other up, but you're also tough with each other. And you guys are the model of what we wish we could all have. Most people don't have it.
Well, and it's really hard.
Well, we love to hear that. But yeah, we should point out, we don't coach each other. I mean, it's fairly rare for us to look at each other's works in progress.
Now, Willie,
that's just not really what we do.
What's really hard about being friends and editing each other's works is it's really hard to set parameters for what you want. Like sometimes, you know, you want someone to just tell you what a darn good job you did. And sometimes that's the important part of being a friend. And being a book coach or being an editor is just a different thing. I talk all the time about the fact that in movies, there are all those movies where like the agent and the editor are really good friends with the author, and they like in the book Wonder Boys, he has his agent come to his house and they get high together and they drink together and they're really good buds. And I'm sorry, but for the most part, I like my agent, my editor, but I don't necessarily need to be friends with them. And I don't know that it would be a really good idea.
I'm so envisioning the three of you sitting around drinking and getting high now. And it's something, let me tell you.
Well, because your friends are your friends and your editor is your editor. And it's lovely if you get along with your editor, but I also need my editor to tell me the hard stuff. And that can get in the way of a friendship. So I think it's really important to draw the line. And I think it's also important that to know that absolutely true. I didn't read Chicken Sisters before it was done. I don't read Serena's stuff before it's done. We'll ask each other questions about, you know, elements of our work, but we don't read each other's stuff before it's done.
Well, now I'm going to back up and put you guys on even a higher pedestal, because that's what I actually tell writers groups they should be for each other, is a community of support and a community where you can talk to each other about your writing process and where you are and your doubts and your fears and how it's going. And that's the kind of support that friends can give each other really beautifully, and they should give each other. You know, I always tell people, get together, have the wine, have the cookies. That's so important, because writing is a very lonely thing. And when it's time for professional help, if you're not yet in a place in your career where you have an editor, or you don't have an editor who is able to give you the nurturing and support and intense feedback that you need, which is most editors don't have that bandwidth, you want to turn to a professional to get that.
So tell us how you started. How did you turn into, I mean, there wasn't even such a thing as a book coach exactly when you started doing this.
It's true, there wasn't. I was, as you mentioned at the beginning, I was having a nice writing career. I was a mid-list writer, which is exactly what it sounds like. I was in the middle of the list, neither a hot person at the top of the list or a new person coming up, building my career. I was sort of in the middle, and being in the middle is not a great place to be, but that's where I was. And I was on that path and could have stayed on that path. But what happened was, I was teaching at the UCLA Writers Program, which is actually the largest adult education writing program in the country, because they have a lot of TV, sitcom, screenplay sort of classes, as well as the type I was teaching, which was more narrative based work. And I was teaching in that program, and teaching writing in every setting that I have ever been aware of outside of book coaching is incredibly frustrating, because you get 10 weeks, you know, a 10 week semester, or you get an intensive 5-day course, or whatever the length of time that you get, and you have a huge class full of people. I'm sure Jess has things to say about huge class fulls of students. And you just can't give them the attention that their work needs. You just can't really help them. You feel like you're barely scratching the surface of helping each person. So it's frustrating for the instructor. I think it's frustrating for the student. You see a lot of people taking classes over and over again. And my colleagues and I would be passing students around from, you know, class to class, and they were never making actual progress on their work. It was sort of this piecemeal, well, I'm going to learn, you know, how to write dialogue, or I'm going to learn how to write a scene, or I'm going to learn how to develop a character, or I'm going to learn, you know, this bit by bit by bit. So it was a terribly frustrating environment, I felt, for actually teaching writing. And along that time, one of my colleagues was Lisa Cron, who is now very well known in the writing world as the author of Wired for Story, Story Genius, and the forthcoming Story or Die. And she was teaching in this program as well. And she saw that I had a very strategic and market-focused approach to my work. And she asked if I would help her with the book that became wired for story. She asked if I would coach her through it. She was an agent and a story analyst, but she didn't consider herself to be a writer. And I said, sure, I can do that. Even though I never had, I thought I could do that. And we worked together. And in fact, that book became Wired for Story. And she got a 2-book deal at 10 Speed, which is a division of Random House. So that was great. and I really loved it. I actually really loved the work. And quickly, I began to attract other people who wanted me to help.
At what point did you manage to charging people money for it?
Oh, right from the start.
Oh, good.
And that's something I would love to get back to talk about. I think it's a really important point because a lot of people give away their expertise and talent in this way for free. And I would like that to change in this industry. But I'll finish up my story quickly. Okay. The next client that I helped wrote a memoir that called For the Love of Money by Sam Polk that was sold to Scribner. And my third client sold her book to Simon & Schuster. So the first three clients I had out of the gate did extremely well, and I loved it. And all of a sudden I had a system and a method and a process, and I thought, hey, I could do this. And I began to be a book coach.
Wow.
End of story.
Sorry. As listeners can hear, I have a cold. And I was getting to the point where I could speak. And, you know, Serena and Jess are like, KJ, are you going to ask a question here?
I can just keep talking.
Yeah, you can just keep talking. I'll just step out. We know you could do that, Jenny. No, so you had, I mean, you developed a process for working people through, you know, not just starting a book, but finishing it. And I don't even know where whether to go off in the direction of turning being a book coach into a career, or to go off in the direction of how to coach someone through a book. Let's start with how to coach someone through a book. Like, what does that process look like for you?
Well, the thing that I've learned, I've been doing it now for 10 years, and the thing that I've learned is that creativity is a totally unique thing to each person. What the story they're telling is, or the book they're writing, if it's nonfiction, the way they're structuring it, their voice, all of those pieces are totally unique to each person. And what I learned is that I think we as a culture or a people err too much on the side of deferring to that unique part of the creative process, because it turns out that the creative process is actually the same for everyone. It might unfold in a different time frame or manner, but people go through the same processes when they're making something. And I think it's true not only of writers.
No, Jenny, I'm special. I'm special. I'm different. My creative process is completely different from everybody else's, and you can't possibly understand.
I want to hear what is the creative process that we all go through? What is it that Jess does that she's denying doing?
Okay, so you come up with an idea, right? There's that spark of the idea. And I love hearing what people's spark is. Why this story? Why did this thing stick in your head as a thing you're going to write, or a topic you're going to write about? Why that topic? Why not another one? So that moment of the spark happening and sticking in your head, because I have a gazillion ideas a day, the ones that actually stick and that you actually want to take action on, that's a part of the creative process. And then what you do next is a part of the creative process. Do you start writing notes? Do you start, you begin to envision what the thing is going to be. So there's this envisioning process. And there's always a structural or architectural process. If you're writing a book like Jess, there's going to be research involved. So you can begin to break down the processes. And I also fold into that, not just the, I don't know what you call them, physical processes that one goes through in the creative process, but the emotional aspects as well, which is everybody feels doubt. Everybody at some point thinks their idea is stupid and nobody's going to care. Everybody thinks at some point that they can't do it. And I mean really everybody. I have worked with mega award-winning authors and brand new authors and authors in the middle, and I mean, we could ask Serena to weigh in here. After 30 books, my guess is she still goes through all of those emotions, probably just faster and at different intensities. But that's my guess. Is that right?
Oh, yes. It's quite predictable.
She actually just told me, I think a week or two ago, she said, oh, good, you're supposed to be hating this book right now.
Yeah. Like, and
thanks. I'm right on schedule.
You were.
check me off for going through my, you know, terrible Tuesday.
It's a little bit like that thing where when women are having babies, there's that moment, like, you know, right before the baby comes out where they're like, well, forget it. This is never happening. I can't do it. I'm too exhausted. And it's similar with a book. I think that, you know, there are these phases everybody goes through and we all hate our book at some point or another.
Yeah, I think that's a really good metaphor for it. It's every woman having a baby thinks nobody has ever had it so bad as they have, or, you know, been through the pain that they are going through. But a lot of women have. And so that was, I think, my big revelation, is that the creative process can be tamed. And the book that really got me to clarify this notion was The Creative Habit by Twyla Tharp. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that one, but it's an incredible book. She's a choreographer and she's talking about the creative process with dance. But her big premise is this idea, you know, we have this idea that artists or writers are hit by a lightning bolt from God, and that it comes from outside. It's this external thing that happens to somebody, that sort of overnight genius thing. And her whole notion in that book is, no, creativity is a series of actions that you take. It's a series of practices that you do, and anybody can take those steps and actions. And when I finally read that book and combined those with these ideas I'd had about writing, it was my giant aha moment.
And then, so this is that's the preliminary process, the having of the idea and the creating the structure and stuff like that. But one of the things that you are masterful at is at getting people to go beyond the envisioning and beyond the sparking to the actual part where you turn the idea into whatever the thing is. And that, I think, is where a lot of people fall down. And that is where people find themselves needing a book coach. So how do you... like, what's your process for getting people through that? And that's the longest piece, too.
It is. And I have a kind of answer that might be controversial, so maybe that'll spark some discussion, because the reason I'm able to do that is that people are paying me to do it. And okay. What I mean by that is, so Jess right now is on a deadline for her book, or maybe by the time we listen to this, she's passed. She has people paying her to meet that deadline. She's not going to miss that deadline. She is beholden to people who have a professional relationship with her for that book. Serena writes a book all the time. She's got fans who are waiting. She's got people who want it. Her business depends on that. You know, KJ, you've got a book coming out, another one you're working on. There's a deadline. When you become a professional writer, it is not something that you're doing just because it's fun. It might be fun, but you're also doing it because it's part, you're in a matrix of professional responsibility. And one of the things I think working with a book coach does is gives a writer who's not yet there, or who needs that, you know, if you're paying me, you're going to meet your deadline. If you know that if you miss your deadline with me, you can't just make it up because I don't have room in my schedule for you to just make it up, you're going to meet it. And I have come to believe that that is a huge part of the effectiveness of it, is asking the writer to invest in themselves in a very tangible way.
That makes so much sense to me.
I was going to say, wow. No, because it does. It makes a lot of sense to me, too. And what's funny is, to me, deadlines are this thing that actually helped me stay engaged in the process. And being accountable to someone else, like a book coach or to an editor or to an agent, is I hate to say it, really one of the things that gets my butt in the chair every day. Even especially, I have to say, on the days I'm not having fun, because those are the really hard days when honestly, sometimes you're there because someone needs to see the next chapter, or you know that if you don't get those chapters into your co-author, for example, with Serena, that your co-author is not going to be able to run with the next part. So I think that's part of the incredibly important role that those people play in our lives.
Yeah, and it goes to this idea, if you're a writer who nobody is waiting for your book, nobody, the world is not going to come to an end if you don't finish your book. A lot of people are probably having doubts that you're going to finish your book. Everybody who's started writing has that experience where their family members, during the holidays or what have you, how's that book going? How's that novel going? Are you ever going to finish that? and that's the soup that most people write in, that sort of soup of nobody really needs this. Nobody really is waiting for this. It doesn't really matter if I finish. And by the way, I don't know if it's any good anyway, right, or if I should be spending my time on this, all of those emotions. And I think when a writer makes an investment in their own process and their own success by hiring a professional, or by, it doesn't have to be a book coach. It could be going to a writing conference or going to a workshop or doing something that is demonstrating your seriousness of purpose and intention. And I do think the money matters, because what other thing do we do where we don't put a deep investment into
right.
it? Even if we're talking about something like exercise, and you're going to be more healthy and you're going to lose weight or whatever your goal is with that exercise, you're going to invest something.
Right.
You're going to buy running shoes. You're going to get a gym membership. You're going to invest time. You're going to, go get the cute clothes that make you feel good when you work out. That would be me.
Well, can I shift gears a little bit and talk about, so I'm one of those people that, like, when I hear about a cool job like being a book coach, even though I have more work on my plate than I could already do, I automatically go to that place of like, ooh, I could do that job. That would be such a cool job. But I want to know what makes for a good book coach. And, I'm imagining, and I know that we've seen this on our Facebook group, that there are some writers out there that are like, ooh, this could be an interesting sideline for me because, I'm trying to support my writing and I need to have an extra income stream. And so could you tell me a little bit about like what makes for a good book coach and how one becomes a book coach as opposed to just someone who likes to read stuff? Because there's a big difference between people who are like, oh, I read a lot of books. I could edit books. What makes for a good editor and how does that happen?
Well, there's five things that I look for when I'm looking to hire or looking to train someone. And the first one is just a straight up ability to do mechanical edits. So that's an editing ability and an understanding of the way that process works. It's a very teachable skill. A lot of people have it. A lot of people can learn it. It's kind of the baseline. The second thing is I believe people need a sense of narrative design, the ability to visualize the way a narrative works in a reader's brain and how it hits them. And a good reader or a book reviewer probably has a lot of that knowledge that they can codify to be a helping knowledge. But that ability to look at a narrative and see what's not working with it and say why it's not working is critical.
As opposed to that feedback you get in book groups, which is like, oh, something feels off and I can't tell you. That's not exactly helpful.
Right. That's right. The third thing.
I don't know what it is, but I know it when I see it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or the worst is maybe you shouldn't make this a mystery. Maybe it should be a romance instead. That kind of thing is not helpful.
Maybe this isn't a book. Maybe it's a movie.
So the third thing I look for is a marketplace awareness. The universe of publishing is quite complicated. It's fast moving. It's shifting all the time. And a book coach has to be aware of that. If they're helping writers to achieve their goals, they have to be aware of that marketplace. And that too is a learnable skill. It is something you can teach yourself how to do. The fourth thing I look for is compassion. And I'm adamant about this because there's a lot of people who can bring all these other talents to the task, but they're mean and they rip people's work apart.
I want to become a book coach because I need an outlet for my anger.
Oh, dear.
I mean, I've seen it time and again. It's really horrible. People are really mean to people who are trying to bring something to life. And I think compassion for the writer and for the process is really important. And I use the term tough love. And what I say about that is that's not just a phrase. I'm very, very tough. I have asked people to throw away 500 page manuscripts and start over again. And there've been tears, and the toughness is really important, but it has to be delivered with true compassion. And if you can't do that, I don't think you can be a good coach. And then finally, the fifth thing is project management. You know, I know Serena is a master of the bullet journal, and that you guys talk about this all the time. But the ability to, you know, writing a book is a very complex intellectual undertaking. Whatever the book is, it's, you know, middle grade novel about dragons or a scholarly work like Jess is doing now with lots of research and citations. It's always a complex project, and people don't quite think that. They think, oh, a book. You know, I know what it's like to read a book. I start at the beginning and I go to the end. So that's what it's like to write a book. And it's like, no, there's a whole process of managing the project and managing the goals and managing your emotions. And that's what a book coach needs to bring to the process, because we're working with people through that whole process. So you've got to have a sense of management around a creative task. So those are the things that I think you need.
So I think I am struck by the fact that you did not say you need to have published a book.
Okay, Jay, is that like the softball pitch of the century?
Yes, yes it is.
It makes me absolutely insane that people think they have to have an agent, or they have to have published a book, or they have to have been a big bestseller. I think it helps to have written a book for sure. But there are so many industries where the people who teach are not the same as the people who do the thing. We expect this in the NBA. We expect this, you know, an executive business coach who's helping the CEO of a Fortune 50 company has probably not been the CEO of a Fortune 50 company. And for some reason, when it comes to writing, we impose this false expectation on it. And I think it's far more important to be a good teacher, to be able to articulate and help somebody, than it is to be able to do the thing.
I think that's absolutely true. I think, and especially since the best teachers have this ability to sort of perspective take with the person they're working with, so that you can sort of get inside how they're thinking about something. And that has less to do, I think there is something to be said for a familiarity with the process, but that doesn't necessarily, you know, have to be, you know, having written a best-selling novel on your own.
Yeah, yeah. And I think... We could talk for days about this. I don't know why people who can teach are devalued, and that's teachers as well. Why don't we pay our teachers the most of everyone? I don't understand that, to save my life. And it's the same idea that, oh, you can't coach somebody if you don't have these metrics or you don't tick them off. And if somebody has the elements that I've listed off or believes they can learn them, and I think they're all teachable and learnable, then I think you can become a good book coach.
So if you think you're this person, if you think you could coach a friend, or probably better, not a friend, through the process of writing a book, how do you convince yourself that that would be something that is worth someone paying? This is so ridiculous, but, you know, we often have trouble valuing our time and our skills. How do you get from, I think I can help you do this, to also, I think you should pay me?
It's actually a huge issue. And it's a huge issue because a lot of the people that are doing this work are women. And I find that women have a very, very hard time asking for someone to pay for something that feels easy to them or feels somehow not worthy in the world. And it's something that I help the coaches that I train probably more than anything else, which is the mindset. And that mindset that this is valuable, you are offering something of value and you should be paid for that time. So the first step in getting there is to think about that mindset. A lot of people who come to book coaching are actually already doing this work for free. They're the person who everybody says, will you read my pages? Everybody says, will you copy edit this with your red pen? You know, everybody says at the book club, what did you think of the book? Because they're the ones who can see the plot holes. You know, oftentimes they're already doing this. And so the move is to change your mindset and shift your mindset and think, I am offering something of value. I'm helping people through something that they value, and therefore I should place a monetary value on it. And that mindset shift is huge and really hard. And I've spent quite a lot of time in my own career thinking about this and working on it and learning about it. And, you know, I went from charging a small hourly fee to charging a bigger hourly fee to charging a project fee to charging a higher project fee to charging a retainer, you know, kind of up the scale of valuing my own self. And that's a process that I am very eager to help people move through, because I think it's really important to the individual and also to this industry as a whole, that this whole starving artist, writers don't make money, therefore they can't pay money, therefore people who help them shouldn't be paid money. I want to just blow that whole thing to smithereens.
Well, one thing that I think gets in our way is the question of what is valuable. So as a book coach, you cannot promise that the person is going to come up with something that someone else will pay for, right? You know, you can't guarantee, certainly can't guarantee traditional publication. You can't guarantee independent publication. You can't really guarantee anything other than that you are capable of, you know, offering the kind of encouragement and guidance that that could get someone else through the process of creating something that they themselves need to value. Is that?
Absolutely. And you're right. I would run as fast as you can run from anyone in the publishing industry who thinks they can guarantee you anything, because that is false. There are no guarantees of any kind.
I don't know, Jenny. I can guarantee you that I can make you an Amazon bestseller in the category of medieval knights who play soccer, and that's linked to the parenting category. I can probably get you that.
You know, medieval soccer playing dad knights.
You could guarantee that, actually. I recently self-published a little book on book coaching that's called Read Books All Day and Get Paid for It. And when you self-publish in a certain way, you can't do pre-orders. And there was just a series of reasons that I just made it live on Amazon for no reason and with literally no announcement to anyone anywhere ever. And I took a screenshot because, in fact, it was a bestseller the moment that I made it live. And I was like, yay me, look at that.
But I'm joking, but there are people that do have a business model based on, I can make you a bestseller, but really they're not as much interested in helping shape your writing possibly than, you know, doing exactly what you just said and writing a book about, you know, soccer playing knights, coaches, medieval ages, and so that you can be number one in an Amazon category and therefore have, quote unquote, a best-selling book.
No, it's true. So all you can guarantee is that you can help them, help the writer do their best work possible. And it's akin to hiring a personal trainer that, you know, you can show up to your workouts and you can do what they ask of you and you can put the energy in, but they can't guarantee you an outcome. And I go to an acupuncturist every week to manage my health, And, you know, I think about this all the time. She can't make me better. She can't actually solve for the problem that we're working on. It's up to me. And she is somebody that I use in the toolbox of things that I do to manage my health. And I value it and I pay a lot for it. And I put energy and time into it. And I show up for my appointments and all those things. And it's quite similar. What a book coach can promise is not the outcome, but a better process, a better awareness, support along the way, somebody who's been there before and knows what that creative process is like and how it's going to unfold. And this is where, for me, the satisfaction of the work comes. I like nothing better than when one of my clients has a big win, and that's a really fun day, and it's a fun thing to put on the website and, you know, all of that. But the true satisfaction comes in the quiet, truly helping somebody else do this thing that they've probably wanted to do since they were a child, and the power of helping them do that, and the emotion that comes when they do that. You know, I believe, and you guys can certainly weigh in on this, that there are a lot of good days in the life of a book, but I think the best days are the ones, the quiet ones, when you know you've nailed it, when you know that you've achieved the vision you had in your head for that book. The other things that come, the external things that come, are good. We all want them. But truly, you know, and it's easy to say when you've been there already, but truly, I think the satisfaction comes in that self, what's the word I'm looking for? Actualization of the idea.
So if you're somebody that values, I mean, once you know that that's the thing that you value, that that's the thing that you're looking for, I think investing in a book coach is an easier thing to do. And also investing in yourself as a book coach, you know, knowing that that's where you're trying to help someone get to, not to bestseller status, not to traditionally published status, not to, knights in white satin playing soccer status. But the status of knowing that there's something that they really wanted to do that now they have done or are in the process of doing. And, you know, we're all just in the process, right?
It's so true.
So we, you know, we're like at the max of hashtag mwriting podcast timing. But I know that you are about to do more on the topic of helping other people become book coaches. So tell us how people could find out more about learning the business of book coaching.
Well, I would love to invite everybody who is interested in this topic to a summit that we're running at Author Accelerator on January 20th. And it is, you can find all about it at authoraccelerator.com/.
And it's free.
Summit. Just, it's just so free.
Yeah. It's so free. It's the freest thing that you could put. It's mega free.
It's a week of online free programming with 15 experts talking about mindset, marketing, money, strategy, everything about what it's like to be a book coach. I've got book coaches talking about book coaching. I've got clients talking about it, and I've got all kinds of experts. And it's meant to just give a 360 view of what this work is like. I'm putting it on because I'm launching a book coach training and certification program and universe, and I have a million classes and things that I'm selling. But the summit itself is free, and it is honestly going to be just incredible. The interviews are already done and they are amazing. And I think you can get a very good sense if this work is something you want to do, or if book coaching is something you want to have for your own writing life. It's going to be a really fun week, and people can jump in and listen.
If you're listening later, you can still go back and
yes,
find more information at authoraccelerator.com.
Yes, I think you will always be able to find it at authoraccelerator.com/summit. As long as the internet lives.
You know, if people are listening to the podcast, I just feel like, yeah, if you're listening to this on like the one remaining iPod after the apocalypse, maybe you should have gone for, I don't know, the Beatles. I got nothing. All right. So on that depressing note.
Yeah. Do we have a second to talk about what we've been reading? What's everybody been reading?
Well, I'm reading.
Oh, Serena, you go first.
I just wanted to say that I'm reading the book that KJ just recommended a couple episodes ago because she recommended it, Tuesday Mooney Talks to Ghosts, and it is just as good as KJ said before.
It is so fun.
All right, I'm going to really have to check that one out. I'm reading actually some books that Serena had given the thumbs up on, and I think I mentioned them before. It's the I'm working my way through the Christina Lauren oeuvre of romance and the free standalones mostly. So I have plowed my way on audio through Roomies and Love in Other Words, and I'm having just a really lovely time, especially since the counterpoint to my Christina Lauren books is a textbook on the Introduction to Addictive Behaviors. So it's kind of fun to have something lighter to listen to. And they're just delightful. And they keep hitting it out of the park, like with each one. And what's really cool about their books is that they're co-authors, but there's really a unified voice in those books, which is really nice.
There really is. And they've had a lot of practice. And they met in a fan fiction forum, like years and years ago.
Really?
Yep.
Oh, that's cool.
Jenny, read anything good lately?
Yeah, I've been reading a lot of middle grade. I try to bounce around in my reading to really get different things. And I read a book called The House That Lou Built by May Respicchio. And it's this super charming book about a young girl who builds a tiny house. And she's a Filipino girl, and it's great to see a young protagonist of color and a girl who's working with her hands and building this thing, and the story is great, and I really enjoyed it.
I have a total departure both for me and from what everyone else has been reading. I read it's Convenience Store Woman.
What's that?
Yeah. Convenience Store Woman, it's a Japanese book, and I obviously read it in translation, and it is the story of a woman who is, the narrator is quite clearly autistic to some degree, and works in a convenience store and loves working in a convenience store, and all of the people around her would prefer for her to live a more normal and conventional life, and this is the story of her rebelling against that expectation, told in her voice. And, you know, it's short. It's a very different literary voice. It's definitely more of a literary fiction, fun is not necessarily exactly the word that I'm looking for, but it's really an enjoyable read. It's interesting. It's a world you don't see. And plus it's set in Japan, which is kind of, just gives it a whole different flavor. So I do recommend it. It's a great one to pick up. And it has a couple of neat covers. So that's kind of just to harken back
Very cool. To
our discussion last year of covers, where they did a couple of different things. So you're almost bound to get a good cover no matter which version you get.
Cool.
Well, I want to do a very quick bookstore shout out this week, mainly because we didn't do one, I think, last time around, but mainly because we don't tend to shout out a lot of used bookstores. And I am doing research for a book that I may or may not write, and a lot of the books are really expensive. So I went to some used bookstores, and one of them was the Crow Bookshop on Church Street in Burlington. And I found a stack of books that I really desperately needed. And I think I paid like $60 for a stack of like 10 books. I was so excited. And, you know, used bookstores can be a really great place to find those books that are maybe out of print or difficult to find. And so I wanted to give The Crow, which, by the way, also has a fantastic logo with a beautiful crow. And my dad has this very weird relationship with the crows in his yard. So I even bought a T-shirt from my dad with a big crow on the front. So thank you to the Crow Bookstore for solving not only my research woes, but my dad's birthday woes.
We really don't spend enough time in used bookstores. I used to.
I love them.
I used to spend so much time in them, and now I feel like my whole life has sort of gotten wrapped up in what books are on the new and upcoming table. And I don't quite understand how I slid down that way and how I can get it back, but maybe that's a goal for this year.
I think it's the internet. I think it's the, ooh, I got to be first. I got to be there first. I got to read it before anyone else. But, you know, sometimes the good oldies are a wonderful place to hang out.
Yeah, I like it.
All Thank right. you, Jenny, so much for coming on and talking more about book coaching, because it's something that we do get a lot of questions about in the hashtag AmWriting Facebook group. So it's really nice of you to come and clarify some of those things for us.
Thanks for having me.
Before we sign off, another just letting everyone know that, as always, you can find us in the hashtag AmWriting Facebook group. Just search hashtag AmWriting on Facebook and there we will be. You can also always download the show notes for every episode at amwritingpodcast.com, where you could sign up for our weekly emails in which both the show notes and the episode drop right into your inbox. You can also take the opportunity while you're there to sign up to support the podcast. We love doing the hashtag AmWritingPodcast, and it is to some extent a labor of love. And if you would like to support us and help us to know that you would love for the podcast to continue, it is extremely helpful if you sign up either for our weekly emails or for our supporter emails, in which every week you get a weekly top five for writers of actionable, useful advice that we compile in lists of top five, and I forgot where I was going with that.
That was a good save. I like it.
But we appreciate your support, and you know, we're asking for it. So if you got a couple of bucks to shoot us every month, we'd say
all right, thanks. KJ, it's time for you to take a nap.
Oh God, cut me off, please.
Until next week, everyone. Keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. This episode of Hashtag AmWriting was produced by Andrew Perella. Our music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and performed by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their services because everyone, even creatives, should be paid for their work.
Pause. Stop. Stop.
Thank you.